Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Moving the legislature from Juneau to Anchorage could cost anywhere from a little less than $3 million to nearly $45 million. That's according to a report by the State Office of Management and Budget. A group is aiming to have a ballot measure next year to move the legislature to Anchorage. The big range in costs depends on whether the state builds new office space for legislative staff or rents space. The estimated cost to rent is at least $460,000 per year, not including remodeling. The cost to build space could be $42 million. Another group has formed to oppose the ballot measure. A previous attempt to move the legislature to Matanuska-Susitna Borough failed. SF4 ballot measures to move the entire capital. Voters approved moving the capital in 1974, but declined to spend the money for it 4 years later. Cruise lines are bringing four mega ships to Alaska this season, and marine pilots have been studying the new arrivals, modeling how they'll sail in southeast waters. But as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the pilots are concerned about one of them.
International cruise ships often fly the flags of Panama, Bermuda, the Bahamas, and other so-called flags of convenience. Alaska requires these foreign flag vessels to take one of its state-licensed marine pilots on board. Captain Jeff Bacon is one of them. He spoke to Coast Alaska last fall about his job.
So we go on board, we take control of the ship, and we guide the ship through the waters the entire time there in southeast Alaska.
As cruising gets more popular in Alaska, the size of the ships has increased. The Norwegian Bliss came calling in 2017, carrying 5,700 passengers and crew. This year, it'll be joined by its sister ship. Other cruise lines are following suit. Royal Caribbean International's Ovation of the Seas, the largest ever to visit Alaska, is also expected. And add Princess Cruise Line's flagship Royal Princess to make a total of four megaships in Alaska this season.
All of those ships are azipod ships, which are very maneuverable, except for the Royal Princess. She's a conventional ship and, I will just say, less maneuverable.
We'll get to what azipod ships are in a minute. Southeast Alaska Pilots Association has tested the limits of each of the four megaships in virtual reality. It used computer models provided by the cruise lines, all except Princess Cruise Lines. Its owner, Carnival Corporation, required the pilots sign a non-disclosure agreement. That didn't happen. Instead, an Alaska pilot spent 9 days aboard Royal Princess. Using that data, pilots built their own model and ran simulations. They publicly released their findings this month. To be clear, they haven't tested the ship here. They ran a simulation. But the model of the Royal Princess produced serious challenges in wind and current conditions common to Southeast Alaska. That's a direct quote from the report. It also found the megaship didn't handle well at low speeds. None of the pilots Coast Alaska contacted were willing to talk about it. The cruise line released a statement questioning the marine pilots' findings. It said the computer model needed refinement and noted that Royal Princess is among three Royal-class ships the company says operates safely in other parts of the world. So what might set the Royal Princess apart from other megaships? It uses standard propulsion, propellers and rudders. The other three have something called azipod propulsion.
With an azipod-style propulsion, the propeller is actually on a pod below the ship, and what you can do is rotate that pod.
Keir Moorhead is an engineer who teaches at California State University Maritime Academy. He says azipod is especially useful at low speeds when big ships need to maneuver in tight spots.
At any given moment, you can rotate a propeller in 360 degrees to give you thrust in any direction.
Moorhead also took a look at the Pilot Association's findings. He says there's a reason a large conventional ship might be harder to control at lower speeds.
And that's because there isn't enough water passing by the rudders to provide the turning force.
For most cruise ships visiting Alaska, Ketchikan is the first port of call. Getting in there requires passing through the Tongass Narrows. It's about 220 yards wide, so there's not a lot of room to maneuver. And there's a 7-knot speed limit. The pilots recommend against the Royal Princess attempting this in more than 15 knots of wind.
15 knots of wind in Ketchikan, I mean, it blows 15 knots here quite often.
Captain Stephen White is commander of the Coast Guard Sector Juneau. He says the cruise lines and the Pilots Association are in talks to figure out how to bring the ships into port safely. But it won't be up to the cruise ship captain to decide whether to risk it.
Here's the real deal. The go, no go, the pilot the individual pilot is the one where, in regulation and all that, has that power.
Alaska is a hot cruise destination with 1.3 million visitors projected this season. Carnival's Royal Princess has been sailing elsewhere, but the company announced in late 2017 it would be heading to Alaska this year. A cruise line is within its rights to sail its ships wherever it sees fit, but Moorhead says he hopes each ship's limitations are taken into account.
It would be ill-advised of a, you know, of a vessel owner to knowingly bring a vessel into a port where it can't, you know, it can't safely tie up.
The balance between the economic boost from cruise ship tourism and local impacts is an ongoing conversation. Representative Dan Ortez is an independent lawmaker from Ketchikan.
Everybody recognizes that as these ships get bigger and bigger, they create more challenges for communities to, to come up with answers as to how we're going to deal with it.
The Royal Princess is scheduled to make the first of 19 visits to Southeast Alaska on May 13th. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Do you have an idea for what to do with the abandoned tugboat hanging out in Gastineau Channel? City Docks and Harbors Department is seeking suggestions from the public for the most cost-effective way to dispose of the Lumberman, which is on state tidelands across from Eakin Drive. Port Director Carl Yucatil and his team met with representatives of local salvage companies today to discuss ideas, but they're willing to hear from anyone by the May 3rd deadline. Yucatil says he's also been hearing unsolicited suggestions from members of the public for months.
Somebody said, well, we should burn it on the 4th of July. Another one said we should use it as a pirate ship at Twin Lakes. Another one that maybe is viable is they thought that it's becoming kind of an iconic figure and keep it in place, but maybe put flowers on it or, you know, kind of spruce it up a bit. And I did not target those types of solicitations, but I listened to all suggestions, right?
Yucatil says any option they pursue will have to be legal and environmentally sound. That means burning the boat or blowing it up are probably off the table. The Lumberman also still has an owner, Juneau resident Brandon Mattson, who Yucatil says is not in a position to take care of the problem. The city would need his permission before disposing of the boat. Although Docks and Harbors originally said sinking the boat somewhere offshore would not be considered, Yucatil says that's now back on the table. The city has no money budgeted for the disposal. If the costs are too high, they may decide to do nothing. It's not blocking a waterway or causing any known issues right now.
There might be a maximum that we just say we're not going to pursue it. That it's too costly, that it's safe where it's at, it's riding well on the anchor, we monitor it. That is a possibility.
The U.S. Coast Guard removed hazardous materials from the Lumberman last year. The city borrowed an anchor to secure the boat, which hasn't moved much since last May when it floated north up the channel from Aurora Harbor. The city also hired a salvage company to pump water off the boat earlier this year to keep it from listing too much. The city has maintained that the Lumberman is the state's responsibility since it's anchored on Department of Natural Resources land. Docks and Harbor sent a letter to the state attorney general's office asking them to pursue legal action against the owner. They declined. Yucatil says they're being proactive because they don't want a repeat of the situation several years ago with the Challenger, a similar tug that sank in the channel after falling into disrepair. The Coast Guard spent about $2 million recovering and disposing of that vessel in 2016. Governor Mike Dunleavy has filled a second Palmer Superior Court judgeship weeks after the deadline to make such a pick. He announced Wednesday his selection of private practice attorney Kristen Stoller. Last month, Dunleavy made one appointment to the court but refused to make a second. He cited questions with the nomination process. He relented after meeting with Alaska Supreme Court Justice Joel Bolger. A state Human Rights Commission official indicated Thursday that the commission's former executive director had not penned a letter of apology for calling out on social media a Black Rifles Matter sticker on a truck in the commission's parking lot. Sarah Monckton told the commission Marty Buscaglia was supposed to write an apology letter to the truck's owner. Buscaglia was suspended for complaining on the commission's Facebook page about the sticker, which he believed to be racist. Buscaglia has since announced her resignation. And finally, Hawaii lawmakers are considering a resolution calling for the creation of legal protections for Native Hawaiian cultural intellectual property. The move comes after Chicago restaurant chain owner shocked the island state by trademarking the moniker Aloha Poke. The owner sent cease and desist letters to similarly titled cubed fish shops around the country, demanding that they change their names, including a downtown Honolulu restaurant and a Native Hawaiian-operated restaurant in Anchorage.